This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. This is episode... I'm looking at the episode number on my piece of paper, but it doesn't seem right. Maybe it's right. 403? Maybe. I'm not sure about that. Anyways, it's over 400 somewhere on our way to 416, which will be 8 years worth of podcasts. Woohoo! We obviously always do a joint podcast on the whatever year's worth of podcasts. Well, I do a podcast with someone else, and in recent years, I just decided I'm going to start doing podcasts with the family, and that way we can use those, we can look back on them and say, hey, that's what happened in that year, and hey, you know, maybe record the grandkids as they're coming up and use them for memories, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that is coming up in March. Last year, however, we did do a Star Wars special version of the podcast reflecting on the Star Wars movie. And there is a new Star Wars movie, and it's getting pretty good reviews. So maybe the family is going to go. The family is going to go to the Star Wars movie, maybe. That week after Christmas, let all the crowds die down a little bit, go see the Star Wars movie, and then record our thoughts. So we'll see. We'll see. Sounds like fun. Just sounds like fun. And maybe we'll have a new member of our crew. Since Amber is living with us now, she's family. So that all is going fine. It's just going fine. We've kind of all settled into a new rhythm, you know, with having Amber there, and she's been a welcome addition. Her little doggy, we're just working all that out. We are going to try to put up a temporary carport for her this weekend, so that when it starts snowing and icing and all that kind of stuff, she won't have to clean her car off. So that's supposed to be coming in today or waiting for me when I get home. This is going to be interesting. Especially since we had kind of said that we'll put it together, yes, on Saturday. But we have the weirdest weather coming in, according to the hourly forecast. Supposedly, the high on Friday is going to be 40 degrees, and the low on Friday is going to be 40 degrees. What? And on Saturday, the high is going to be like, what, 20s, and the low is going to be 8. 8. With wind chill driving it down even farther. And what's really interesting is when you watch the hourly predictions, forecast, supposedly on Saturday, the warmest it's going to be on Saturday is going to be 2 o'clock in the morning. What? Because it's going to peak. I don't know how they do the highs and lows temperatures. There's like some weird way to do the highs and lows temperatures. But supposedly, sometimes Google tells me things that I don't know, like, what it is trying to tell me. Because this isn't an appointment on my calendar, but that little ding that you just heard, that was from Google. And the thing that said I was supposed to do set a reminder, and it said call State Farm. And that reminder was like from months ago. Months and months ago. I don't know, it just all of a sudden took a decision that it was gonna tell me about that again. Ain't artificial intelligence grand? Uh-oh, this is my daughter calling me. I gotta go, be back. Okay, I'm back. When my daughter calls, everything stops. So, anyways, weird weather on Saturday, because supposedly, the warmest time of Saturday all day is going to be at 2 a.m. in the morning. It's like 51 degrees. I know it said the high was 40 and the low was 40. I don't know how that all works, but it's like 51 degrees on the hourly forecast. And then from 51 degrees, it just does a steady drop through the early, early morning hours, all the way through morning, all the way through afternoon. I think maybe there's a little bump in the afternoon, but there's not much. All the way through Saturday night, all the way through early, early, early Sunday morning, to where when you get to 5 a.m. Saturday morning, which 5 or 6, that's about the time I'm going to be catching a ride in church with my son-in-law. Yeah, it's going to be cold. It's going to be cold. We'll survive it. Put my long johns on. We'll survive it. Anyway, so that's all well and good. I'm on my final read-through at this point with book 5 of Windfall, The Reddening Sky. I'm hoping to finish that this weekend. If I can get it finished this weekend, then as next week I can go ahead and work on the cover, get the cover squared away. I'm doing something new on the cover that I've never done before. And that is, I'm taking the outfit that the kids are dressed in, and I'm actually modifying it in a major way in terms of the color. So, the dress right now that Clara is wearing is kind of a green, excuse me, I got the hiccups. It's kind of a green with a floral pattern on the green, and then the top this is going to be great with hiccups. The top is actually a floral pattern as well, but the underlay is cream with flowers and things, and there's like gold braid on it, and I'm going to turn it all black into like a morning dress. And then my grandson, he's actually wearing a little brown cap, and I'm going to turn that black as well. So this will be interesting. I did a trial run on it, and it looked okay. And I thought, oh, okay, that'll work. But, you know, got to actually do it. So it's going to be fun. Once I get that done, then I have to finish up the cover, relay out the book after with all the corrections in it, do the Kindle version, do the EPUB version so that I can put it up on Nook as well. Once those are done, it'll be done and done for book 5. And moving on to book 6. So next week, I hope to have that all finished. And then the actual week between Christmas and New Year's, I'll go back and I'll start doing my read-through for book 6. And book 6, of course, is Wheat and Tares. So I still don't quite know exactly what's happening. I've got the book about half finished. And this business of writing the next book while the beta readers are reading, it is fabulous. It is just, I love this because I get input from the beta readers. I can see what they understood, what they didn't understand. And then I can, as I'm making the final read through, I can tweak the book in such a way that it sets up for the next book because I've already got the next book half written. So this is great. I love this. Anyway, so all is well and good. Today, I came across on Facebook one of these extravagant claims, clickbait, really. It's really clickbait. I wouldn't necessarily go so far as to call it fake news, although they do misquote a physicist. Trying to decide what is fake news and what isn't, that would be a full-time job for a whole bunch of people, and it would be highly subjective. I got tickled this week because I was watching a show that I watch. I watched Chelsea. I was going to decide whether I was going to mention what it was, but I was watching Chelsea because I love getting into other viewpoints. And she was trying to get people to listen got to listen to the stuff that's actually news, highly respected, like the Washington Post and the New York Times. You need to listen. That's who you need to get your news from, because there's so many lies out there, and Trump will just say these things that are obvious lies, and there's just so many of them that people can't. But you got to listen to the New York Times and the Washington Post. And, of course, my response was, I was looking at it and going, yeah, and if I had done that, I would have thought Hillary was going to win the election, because they were way off. Way off. And they actually came, some reporters, I think it was from the New York Times, said, yeah, we quit being reporters and spent too much time being cheerleaders. Okay, well, there you go. We're all kind of biased. We all kind of put our own slant on things. That's the way this article was. Put it on slant on thing. But when I read the article, I thought, well, there you go. It's coming. It's coming. So instead of just going by what the article said, of course, I highlighted the physicist's name, and I said, okay, let's do some searching. Ran down through, found some other articles, including an interview with him where he explained what he was saying more, because the clickbait title was such and such respected physicist claims that he's found God in the universe. This will make the atheist furious. Yeah. But I thought, that doesn't quite sound right. And so the name of the physicist, oh, I'm going to just slaughter this. The name of the physicist is Michio Kuka. And I've seen him around on a bunch of things, including Down the Rabbit Hole, which is a very interesting movie. Supposedly a documentary, but very interesting movie. He was on that, I think, you know, giving opinions on things. So, the gist of this is that he says that we physicists are the only scientists who can say the word God and not blush. And he does make some fairly extraordinary claims. Uh-oh, looks like somebody had an accident. He does make some fairly extraordinary claims that 10, 20, 30 years ago, he would have been roundly criticized for, probably. But we are to the point now where we know more. And what this gets back to for me is this gets back to that idea of the three waves of science. And I've talked about this before, that the first wave of science is simple external observation. I look at the animals, I look at the trees, I look at the grass. And in that first wave of science, then I want to do some investigation. I'm just observing. I'm not really doing investigation from a true scientific perspective, but I'm looking around myself and I'm trying to figure out how the world works. So as part of that, maybe I'm modeling some clay and I make something that looks just exactly like an animal, and then I say, well, see, I just don't know how to make it move, but that's not that big of a deal. In that environment where I'm not actually doing true scientific investigation, while it's easy for me to make assumptions about the complexities of things, in that environment, I don't need to be an atheist. Because God is not that far away from what I am. And so I'm comfortable with that idea that, oh yeah, well, I can do that too. I mean, I just don't know how, but I'll learn. In the second wave of science, we begin true investigations. And we begin to discover complexity. We begin to discover size and the enormity of the universe. We begin to discover all of these elements that make us feel intimidated. Because of that, then, God is far away, and it becomes uncomfortable. And because we've made all these discoveries, so suddenly we are the masters of our own fate. And now we don't need God, we don't want God, because God makes us feel small. So then, no, there can't be a God, there can't be a God. And then in the third wave of science, we continue to learn, We continue to see that complexity increase. We continue to see beautiful design. We continue to see amazing balance. And at some point we go, you know, I don't think this all just happened. There has to be a designer. And what this physicist was saying is that there's been enough investigation into the universe and the amazing simplicity of the equations that define the universe and the amazing beauty and harmony of the universe that he's saying that physicists do believe that something out there created it, that something they did not understand. Now, they're not willing yet to say it's the Christian God. Okay? They're not. But they're willing to do, as he said, what Einstein did. And of course, Einstein was living long enough ago when he made statements like, God does not play dice with the universe and that sort of thing, that it's sort of quaint. But he explained that when physicists talk about God, he said they're not necessarily talking about, quote, the design of humans. We're not talking about an intervention that gave us eyes and noses and ears, but where did the laws of physics come from? And at this point, I would add, they're not talking about that yet. But as we discover more complexity in the human body, as we discover how finely tuned our intelligence is, how finely tuned our environment is to take it, to take advantage of our intelligence in the environment that we are. I mean, I think that will eventually come, but we're getting there. We're getting there. He says, you know, I work in something called string theory, which makes the statement that we are reading the mind of God. He said it's based on music or little vibrating strings that are giving us particles that we see in nature. The laws of chemistry that we struggled with in high school would be melodies that you can play on these vibrating strings. The universe would be a symphony of these vibrating strings, and the mind of God that Einstein wrote about at length would be cosmic music resonating through this nirvana. Now, I wanted to read that part because next week we're going to talk about play and invention, because I found this great TED Talk on the role of play in invention, and specifically the role of music. So just keep that in mind for next week, because I just love that. We'll get back to that. I'm losing my light, because it's a little later than I usually get home today. Anyways, so he says when, as physicists, they talk about God, they're not really talking about a personal God. They're talking about this force, this design, this something out there that's resonating through 11 dimensions that would be, in their minds, the mind of God. Now, you know, that's a pretty interesting statement, because that's not too far off from theology, that in fact we are all part of the mind of God. We are not God, but we are in his mind. We are thought of. But what he is acknowledging, and I've got an interview with him that goes along those things, but I'm going to have to get in some place where I can get some light. He does say that he has concluded, quote, I have concluded that we are in a world made by rules created by an intelligence. He said, believe me, everything that we call chance today won't make sense anymore. He says, to me, it is clear that we exist in a plan which is governed by rules that were created, shaped by a universal intelligence and not by chance. Okay, so there you go. Anyways, he does go on in another article, and he talks about the fact that whether or not there's a God is not a testable hypothesis, blah, 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 blah. Let me see if there's anything else that's interesting. So this is interesting. So he says the universe is gorgeous. Well, first of all, get back to this thing of how they define God. He said, personally, I think there's much wisdom in the God of Einstein. Einstein basically said there are two types of God. One is the personal God, the God that you pray to, the God that smites the Philistines, the God that walks on water. So that's the first God. Okay, so they're not ready to go there yet, but that's fine. So, but there's another God, that's the God of Spinoza. That's the God of beauty, harmony, and simplicity. And he says, the universe is gorgeous. The universe is very simple, and it didn't have to be that way. The universe could have been random. It could have been ugly. It could have been a random collection of electrons and protons. No life, no vitality, nothing interesting at all. Of course, then we wouldn't be here to see it. But, okay, just a random collection of mist and electrons and photons. That could have been a universe, but it isn't. Our universe is rich. It is beautiful. It is elegant. And you can summarize most of the laws of physics on one sheet of paper. Amazing. In fact, what I do for a living is try to get that sheet of paper and summarize it into one equation 1 inch long. That's called unified field theory. We want to summarize all of the laws of physics into one equation that is 1 inch long. Okay, so I'm backing into my garage. So where does this leave us then? Where are we in these three waves of science? I think we're probably firmly in the middle of that third wave of science. We've already made it far enough that the physicists are now saying that, it's too beautiful. It's just too beautiful to say that it's chance. Now, the way some people get around that is they launch into the parallel universe theory or the multiverse theory, where they say, well, yeah, it looks gorgeous, but that's just because we're here and we can see it. And there's an infinite number of these universes. And so we're not special. We're not unique. Oh, it's infinite. So we just happen to be in the one that's nice. There's not really any way to prove that or not to prove that. So if they want to believe that, that's fine. But we do have physicists at this point, respected physicists, who are saying, yeah, I don't think so. This really looks designed. It really looks like, oh, you know, I got an animal in here. It's our neighbor's cat. And now this cat is in there. I need one moment. Hold it. I just got to get out. Cat, out. Go. Out. Get. Go. Oh, they want biscuits. So I'm going to have to go give them biscuits. But anyway, so it is very, very interesting to see this happen. Do I think this is the end of it? No, it's not the end of it. It is definitely not the end of it, because molecular machinery in the body, molecular machinery spread across all of biology, is stunning. It is deeply stunning and deeply beautiful. And I very much think we are going eventually to come to the point where maybe the biologist won't say it out loud, but if you get them in private, you know, where they feel like they're safe, they're going to shake their heads and say, yeah, it's it's just too gorgeous and too complex, just like the physicists have done. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.